The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Friday, April 15th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And it's got to be a very special day here at Normal Show Live because it is our 700th show. Oh my God, 700 shows. Can you believe it? Ah, the heavyweight champion of internet podcasts for the cannabis community. Glad to be here serving you. 700 shows into it, and we're still cooking. It's an amazing thing. Yeah, that's right. Call out the National Guard. We're having our 700th show. And joining us for our 700th show today is, of course, Ganja John.
What's up, Russ?
I'm just having a good time. How about yourself?
I'm having an excellent time.
Hey, you know, today is April 15th. It's supposed to be tax day, right? And then I go and look at my tax preparer's paid documents that says you don't have to turn them until April 18th. What's the deal with that?
When did that change?
What's up, Coleco?
Hey, I have no idea, but I heard that and I was very relieved.
Is this a thing because it's like Good Friday?
Maybe
because they're I don't know, respecting a Christian holiday? I don't know. Could be. But here we are on Normal Show Live. Glad to have here. And normally at this time, we'd be introducing Cannabis Carrie. She is getting ready up in Grastoria, Oregon, to make her way down here to Portland for the transfer of all this Rolla J Studios equipment. So she's not with us on the live stream. However, she has already pre-recorded her news bits. So coming up right after this break, you'll get Cannabis Carrie with the hemp headlines. And breaking news that we just got via Twitter from Jody Emery prior to going on live here. Mark Emery has been officially denied transfer to Canada by the United States government. You know, they had some hopes that they could appeal and maybe get him to serve his sentence out in a Canadian prison. That has been officially denied by the United States government. He will serve his full five-year sentence right here in the land of the free. There you go for that. So send Jody Emery your best wishes and follow the story of Mark Emery out there on his prison blog, which I believe is on cannabisculture.com. Also coming up on today's show, we've got our Rockin' Friday. So Herb Thrasher's going to call in. He's made a metal, you know it. And he's calling in with a great song today from the Peter Moon Band called Flight 420, which is kind of apropos since we're flying away to the Normal National Conference next week. We need to get on Flight 420. Also on today's show, it is an odd Friday, so that means we're visiting with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com to get the entertainment report, the latest celebrity drug bust, and news in film, TV, music, and sports. And then at the end of the show, we're going to speak with Normal founder Keith Stropp. He's giving the opening address at the Normal National Conference about Normal at 40, his experiences of four decades of marijuana law reform. All that and more coming up next on Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah. Normal National Conference 2011, Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd.
If I'm not a crook.
When President Nixon declared war on marijuana smokers, Normal was founded by a young lawyer named Keith Straub.
And federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We were there when 11 states decriminalized marijuana use.
Seems like such a simple message. Just say no.
We were there as mandatory minimums were enacted and the drug czar was invented.
And I didn't like it and didn't inhale and never tried it again.
We were there for medical marijuana legalization in 15 states.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
And now, in our 40th year, Normal is coming of age as states begin discussing outright marijuana legalization.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Join us in Denver, Colorado, the day after 420 for our 40th annual national conference. You'll learn about marijuana law, cannabis science, and the grassroots activism necessary to end prohibition. Set in the Mile High City, America's cannabis capital. Special guests include medical marijuana pioneer and Harvard Emeritus Dr. Lester Grinspoon, U.S. Congressman Jared Polis, and Normal founder Keith Straub. Normal National Conference 2011, coming of age in Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd. It's the true Rocky Mountain High.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
Russ posed the question about who was next on the list of dispensaries to be raided by the feds, and that answer came on Thursday as four Las Vegas area businesses were raided. According to court documents, the raids came after a four-month-long investigation. The Las Vegas Metro Narcotics Team actually served the five warrants on the businesses and one private home, saying that they were selling marijuana illegally. During the raids, 28 pounds of medical cannabis was seized, along with almost $100,000 in cash. Seven people were arrested and charged with distribution of marijuana, and in total, they face 78 felony charges for possessing and selling marijuana. Authorities associated with the investigation say that they netted a total of $1.2 million in marijuana during the 4 months that they were being investigated. The dispensaries raided were Preferred Medical Marijuana, Perfect Grow, and they ironically named Completely Legal 1.0 and Completely Legal 2.0.
Yeah, more of these raids on medical marijuana dispensaries. I'm sorry, what was that quote again?
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue, simply because I want folks to be investigating violent crimes and potential terrorism. We've got a lot of things for our law enforcement officers to deal with.
What good news. There's no more violent crimes or terrorism for our law enforcement to deal with anymore.
We told you the story on Wednesday about a Canadian judge who declared that the marijuana laws of Ontario, Canada, were unconstitutional. Well, that ruling has already received response from the Canadian government. Yesterday, they were reviewing their options, and they may rewrite the country's medical marijuana laws to make it easier for patients to have access to the substance. Canada still considers growing, possessing, and distributing marijuana illegal, but they were ordered by the courts to allow its use for medical purposes over a decade ago. The case case that started this new discussion in Canada centered around a cannabis activist who had been using medical marijuana to treat his ailments, even though he was unable to find a doctor willing to write him a recommendation, a requirement for legality under Canadian law. The court found him in need of medical marijuana, but found that there is a shortage of Canadian doctors willing to support patients who want to use the treatment as therapy. In the 109-page ruling, Judge Taliano said that the medical marijuana regulations in Canada were written to promote health and regulate medical marijuana, but they have had the opposite effect, forcing Canadian citizens to choose between health or liberty and between relief or social stigmas, and forcing the critically ill to participate in the black market of cannabis. The Canadian government now has 90 days to change the law or have it struck down as unconstitutional, a move that Canadian cannabis activists say would effectively legalize possession of marijuana. The Canadian Federal Health Department took little time to issue a statement on Wednesday, saying that the government of Canada will review the decision and consider its options. The judge's ruling would only affect enforcement in Ontario, but it could be used to support similar challenges to the federal law in other provinces.
Again, I'm not an expert on Canadian constitutional law here, but I'm trying to wonder what they could do to rewrite the law to grant more access in such a way that it would no longer be unconstitutional. Sounds to me like you'd have to grant so much access that you pretty much would have the solution this guy's imposing anyway, that everybody has access to it. I mean, the minute you start limiting people's access to cannabis, you are in some way infecting their ability to control their own health, even if it's as little as a $10 registration on some sort of card somewhere. If someone doesn't have $10, you're restricting them from taking care of themselves. So it'll be interesting to see how this turns out. I'd appreciate any input from our Canadian listeners up there. Our address is stash@normal.org if you get give me more ideas on how the Canadian Constitution might affect this.
A bill to overhaul Washington State's medical marijuana program ran into another stumbling block yesterday. The state's governor, Chris Gregoire, said that she received a letter on Thursday from two U.S. attorneys that said that the bills passed by the Washington State House and the Senate that would permit large-scale marijuana growing and distribution systems would be doing so in violation of federal law. They warned that growers, sellers, landlords, and even state employees who license such operations could face prosecution. After receiving the letters, Washington State's governor now has said that she will not be able to sign any bills that create licensed dispensaries. Gregoire said that there is no way she would sign a law that would open up state employees to federal prosecution. She did acknowledge that there are problems with access in the state's medical marijuana law that makes it difficult for sick people to get the drugs, and she said she will do what she can to cooperate with lawmakers to address those problems. With the announcement that she will veto the medical marijuana regulations bill, advocates were pointing out state programs that have run successfully for years without federal prosecution, such as New Mexico, whose Department of Health has been overseeing distribution of medical marijuana for the last 3 years without interference from the federal government. The letter that Gregoire received on Thursday was in response to her plea for guidance from the federal authorities on the matter. The response from U.S. attorneys Jenny Durkin from Washington's Western District and Michael Ormsby from the Eastern District stated that the bill, quote, would authorize conduct contrary to federal law, and thus would undermine the federal government's efforts to regulate the possession, manufacturing, and trafficking of controlled substances. Accordingly, the department could consider civil and criminal legal remedies regarding those who set up marijuana growing facilities and dispensaries, as they will be doing so in violation of federal law, unquote. After hearing the text of the letter, many advocates are saying that Gregoire's veto plans are a bit of an overreaction to the language that the department said they could consider civil criminal legal remedies instead of saying that they would. The Seattle Times reported that the sponsor of the hard-fought-for regulation bill, Senator Jeanie Cole Wells, a Democrat from Seattle, said that she talked to Gregoire on Thursday evening about the matter and that she was still encouraged that the measure could still be passed, focusing on the fact that any dispensary would be run as nonprofits, making it harder for the federal government to target them for organized crime trafficking. Cole Wells said that her legislative staffers were working on alternatives and looking at a brand new approach, although she failed to elaborate on what the new approach would be.
We've got Governor Gregoire on the phone now. Governor Gregoire, please, please, please calm down. Yes, yes, it's okay. It's okay now. It's okay. Come on now. You're not fooling anybody. You just wanted to veto this thing because you don't like it in the first place. This running to cover for the federal government, running to Holder and the Hag memo and all this and saying, oh, well, gee, the feds will do something. Now, come on. Stand up and be a governor. Stand up and be a leader and help the people of your state. It's obvious they require access to medical cannabis. The dispensaries that have cropped up so far in Washington state are obvious proof of that. And now with Obama administration continuing to raid patients and sending these the attorneys, U.S. attorneys sending these letters to these dispensary operators and landlords, these threats, it's obvious they're going to come down on these people. They're going to raid them and even further restrict their access. Here you are with an opportunity to lead, an opportunity to take these operations that are happening and at least legalize some of them, give patients more protection with a voluntary registry, and be able to legalize a 10-person, 45-plant collective in the state. Also, this bill that you're vetoing would provide an affirmative defense for people from out of state, say like Portlanders who visit Vancouver or people from Moscow who are visiting Spokane. You know, patients from out of state, I don't know if Idaho would count, but still, patients from out of state would receive an affirmative defense. These are some good things in this bill, and you're willing to throw the whole thing out because you're afraid of federal interference, like the advocates are saying here. We see the states in New Mexico, we see these other states that don't have any federal interference with their state-run dispensary programs. There's no reason to fear that in Washington state. You just want political cover, and it's shame on you.
On Thursday evening, senators on the Vermont House floor heard testimony from one of their own. Senator Philip Baruth told his fellow lawmakers the story of his grandmother and his aunt, both who suffered from cancer, and both whose doctors told them marijuana might give them some relief. His grandmother was too horrified to even consider it, but his mother came to ask a senator, who at the time was a college student, if he could find any marijuana for her ailing sister. He said that he was able to find some marijuana for his aunt, but in doing so, he was jeopardizing his student loans and his place in college and his collegiate record. But Senator Baruth said that his personal experience and the memory of his aunt was the reason that he was voting last night for a bill that would allow medical marijuana dispensaries to be established in Vermont. His moving testimony helped the bill pass by 25-4 to allow medical marijuana dispensaries in Vermont, a state that has had a medical marijuana law on the books since 2004. The bill titled S-17 would allow for up to 4 dispensaries in the state, and each dispensary would face a steep annual licensing fee of $32,000. They would also have to pay $2,500 for the privilege of turning in an application, a fee that will not be returned if they are rejected. Once licensed, the dispensaries would be allowed to sell marijuana to people who are registered with the Department of Public Safety to possess medical marijuana. One of the sponsors of the bill, Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Dick Sears, said that currently the 340 or so people registered with the state now have to cultivate their own medicine, with many patients resorting to buying cannabis from a street dealer. Some lawmakers who disagreed with allowing Vermont to have dispensaries said that they are opposed to dispensaries because of their swift expansion in states like California. A police chief from Bennington spoke out against the bill, and one of the senators, Richard Mazza, a Democrat from Grand Isle who voted against it, said he was disappointed in the Public Safety Commissioner, Keith Flynn, for supporting the bill, as the previous Public Safety Commissioner had opposed going against federal law. Senator Vince Aluzzi, a Republican from Essex who happens to also hold the title of Essex County Prosecutor, said that medical marijuana dispensaries put law enforcement in a position of violating federal law. The bill does have one more final vote in the Senate today, then goes to the House, where the Speaker, Shap Smith, a Democrat from Morristown, said that he will forward the bill immediately to the House Human Services Committee, saying that he hopes that they can move on it ahead of the end of the legislative session. If it makes it through in the next week, Governor Peter Shumlin has said that he supports the bill with the many safety measures that were added, including a provision that patients may only register with one dispensary. We will be tracking this bill's progress here on The Stash.
Gee, where are all the U.S. attorney letters to the governor of Vermont complaining about legalizing dispensaries, huh? Gee, I wonder what the difference is. Oh, you know, I know what it is. Vermont has patient numbers in the, like, hundreds, and Washington State has patient numbers in the, like, tens of thousands. That's really the only difference here. That's why we see all these fear-mongering and scare campaigning going on in Washington State, and we don't hear anything on the other side of the country in Vermont where they're considering something very, very similar. All right, folks, as we wind up with a heavy heart and remembrance and respect, we recall that today is the one-year anniversary of the passing of the Emperor of Hemp, Jack Herer. And in his honor, I'd like to play a couple of minutes from his final remarks. We were there with Normal Show Live. It was our second show. We were there for his final remarks at the Portland Hemp Stock. This is from his speech, Hemp Can Save the Planet, Portland Hemp Stock, September of 2009.
Drink, and 8 to 24 years longer than people that do. You gotta be out of your mind not to smoke dope. Once you know this, not even 2 years longer if you smoke it, if you eat the seed out of 3 million seeds and foodstuff on earth, the number one thing in the whole world is hemp from 1 to 100 before you get to soybeans. 1 to 100, the first, second, third, 50th, 90th, 100th things, everything on earth, and the number one thing to 100 is hemp seed, and that's against the law. We didn't know it in public school, high school, or college. I didn't know that 98% of all the food and clothing on the whole world was hemp, and it's the best thing the world has ever had. I don't want to fucking give the United States government one fucking dollar of taxes. I thought they could go to fucking jail for getting you and me and 20 million people getting arrested for pot is the safest thing you can do in the universe. And that is what we're going to do in California. Okay? Come over to my booth. I'm over there. And I will see you next time. Let's give it up for...
This is Peter Tosh for Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Did you know that more than 400,000 Americans were arrested last year for the possession of marijuana? People are being sentenced to up to 40 years for even standing beside a joint. Well, I think it is definitely time for you to help doing something towards this. To find out what you can do, just write Normal, N-O-R-M-L.
1600 K Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. 2006. That's 1600 K Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. 2006.
Help Normal to help protect your rights.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we take you into the weekend with Rockin' Friday, our segment featuring the best rock, metal, punk, and jam band music, brought to you by Herb Thrasher at herbthrasher.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, our last show before we head out to Normal National Conference, we couldn't head out with a better tune than a Rockin' Friday tune from Herb Thrasher. What's up, Herb?
Not too much. Another beautiful day in Portland, Oregon, huh? This is the type of weather we love right here.
I know, I'm loving
good
it.
Good and rainy.
Good and rainy. Liquid sunshine, we call it.
That's right. Hey. So 700th show, huh?
700 of them, yeah.
Right on. That's pretty cool. You know, one time, a long time ago, I smoked my 700th joint.
What was that, junior year?
That's probably a good guess, man. So, I mean, that's about the only 700th thing I can come up with. So kudos to you and Normal, man. That's awesome.
Well, I'm sure you sold 700 lighter leashes.
Well, okay, good point. There you go. Now you're cooking with butter.
Hey, folks,
we're gonna rock it. It definitely seemed like with everyone coming back from the High Times Cannabis Cup in Denver, and then with everyone going out to Normal's conference in Denver, it just seemed like a fitting song to fly the friendly skies. So we found a good song, and we're going back to the south, back to Nashville.
Right.
So let's get on with this. So singer-songwriter Peter Moon, drummer John Bartola, and bassist Doug Kennedy from Nashville, Tennessee, are working hard to reach fans in every walk of life. Over the past year, they've built a reputation as a great live act at colleges and clubs, opened for many Grammy-winning pop artists and outlaw country legends, and forged a classic contemporary rock and roll sound that is winning over audiences throughout the Southeast. Their sound has been described by Dave Bartley of WKXD-FM as Train, Tom Petty, and Sublime road tripping with the Dalai Lama. Otis Redding is driving the bus. I always thought that was pretty cool, so I had to leave that one in. Influenced and inspired by their fans, friends, and family, you can hear that Peter Moon Band loves and lives the music they play. The song, Flight 420, from the album Black Eyed Smiley, is a groovy song that shows a playful and fun side of the band. You can check these guys out on YouTube. They have their own station, Peter Moon Band. They have a MySpace page, /Peter Moon Band, and they have their website, PeterMoonBand.com. So, Stashers, grab a hit, turn it up, enjoy the Peter Moon Band rock in the free world, one moon pine at a time. Rock on, turn it up.
Right on, get them moon pies out. Time for some Peter Moon Band, Flight 420.
To escape your frustration and relieve your aggravation, you should plan your vacation now. So without hesitation, come on, make a reservation. The in-flight accommodations will make you say, wow. Fly the friendly sky. Fly the friendly skies, yeah, yeah. On Flight 420, nonstop to Vancouver, they are always ready for a high time on the people mover. Fly the friendly skies, yeah, yeah, yeah. Leave behind all the drama, ain't no suicide bomber. Don't worry, mama, your baby's fine. And the girl in this picture was not raised on the scripture, but she smiles just like Jesus on a holy high. Fly the friendly skies. Fly the friendly skies. Yeah, yeah. On Flight 420, nonstop to Vancouver, they are always ready. You don't need your suntan lotion. Won't be swimming in the ocean. So buckle up your muckalucks. Get ready to end.
5420, nonstop to Vancouver. They are always ready for a high time, high time. Elevate your situation, celebrate your sister nation.
Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
USVI normal go broke down barrier. Herb is medicine to broke down barrier. Boost the economy and broke down barrier. It's helping other states broke down barrier. Cannabis for legalized to broke down barrier. Join and speak your voice broke down barrier. We gonna change the law broke down barrier. We got to educate broke down barrier. Yeah, this is Nayora, you know, bigging up USVI normal. Working to legalize cannabis, you know, for the whole of the Virgin Islands.
USVI Normal is a non-profit organization working to legalize cannabis for the use by the industries and responsible adults. Do your part. Join USVI Normal. Register to vote. Pass the word. Voice your opinion. You can change the law. Contact us for more information at 340-244-9999.
Everyone move. Everyone move. When it gets your target, it's a tough night.
Marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news.
All right, joining up here with Steve Bloom out there on the East Coast. How you doing, Steve?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, before we went to break, we were playing some footage of Jack Herer's last speech at the Portland Hemp Stock, and I know you were a longtime friend of Jack's, and here it is, the one-year anniversary of his passing. I was just wondering, before we get into all the happy celeb news, if you had any thoughts to share.
Well, you know, he was a great man, and obviously, you know, he led us in this direction that we're heading, and, you know, we're going to legalize it, and, you know, we'll look back and, you know, thank him for, you know, all that he did. So, you know, I mean, everybody loves Jack. There's not too many people out there that say anything bad about him, especially now that he's passed, but he was just a great guy, and, you know, and he was, you know, a real character. You know, he touched a lot of lives. I posted some stuff on Facebook today, and a lot of people are commenting, and everybody's remembering, you know, smoking a joint with him here or there, and he just was a very open, friendly guy. You know, he didn't close the door to anybody. And
yeah.
So he, you know, he really met and touched so many people just because he was just such a friendly person.
Yeah, he was so accessible at all the events, you know, with all the people that want to see him and get their picture taken, get an autograph on the emperor and all that.
Yeah.
And he was friendly to the, every last one of them, you know. People would have to say, Jack, we really have to go. You know, you'd have to pull him away, you know.
Well, Jack famously, you know, would sit there and, you know, do his, like, kind of doodly, you know, signature, you know, messages on his book that would take, you know, about 20 minutes per book. You
yeah.
know, I mean, he'd spend so much time on each book, you know, and even, you know, when he was, you know, not so well, you know, and you know, had, you know, problems, you know, using, you know, his body properly after his stroke and stuff, he would still do that. So, you know, he was sort of old school, you know, we
can
learn a lot from that, you know, and the way he did things.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, going to the Celeb Stoner news, you know, I've pulled up the webpage, and I'd asked you before the show, too, if you'd gotten to see the Your Highness movie. That's been doing really well, and Square Grouper is out as well. So let's talk about those flicks.
He has a bunch of movies that have come out. It looks like a good year for stoner movies in general. There's been a lot of scenes and movies so far this year, but the first real stoner movie to come along is Your Highness. And, you know, it's sort of a follow-up to Pineapple Express, though it's not, you know, similar in the storyline, but it's similar in the characters. James Franco is in it. Danny McBride, who sort of was a supporting character in Pineapple Express, is really the main star of this movie. And it's directed by David Gordon Green, who did Pineapple Express, and it's written by Danny McBride. It's basically, you know, a buddy movie of two brothers. One is, you know, the heroic brother. It's, by the way, it's set in the Middle Ages, and it's kind of a takeoff on Lord of the Rings and movies like that, fantasy movies from, you know, more recently and going back to the 80s. And so the two brothers, Danny McBride and James Franco. Franco's sort of the good brother who goes out there on quests and does heroic things, and Danny's the slacker brother, the stoner, who likes to just kick back and smoke his pipe with wizard weed and, you know, have sex with all the lovely ladies and stuff like that. And so, you know, he's called upon to go on a quest with his brother Fabius is James Franco. His fiance is kidnapped by a wicked a wizard, and they have to go on this, you know, wild quest, and it kind of challenges Thaddeus to sort of be heroic, you know, that he kind of, you know, get off the pipe and do something, you know, so to speak. So it's a fun movie. You know, it's just all there is to it. It's a fun movie. I mean, it's not the greatest movie ever, but it's a fun movie. And in terms of being a stoner movie, you know, it has a lot of the smoking early, and it kind of leaves a little bit behind as they go into their sort of more sort of battle scenes later on, as they have to sort of fight off the wizard and also fight off some traitors. And it's just a fun movie. I mean, Danny McBride has described it as one big dick joke. And and there are a lot of kind of like jokes like that through the movie. So it's a little raunchy, you know, which you probably would expect. You kind of get that from most comedies these days anyway. I do recommend it, and I really, you know, encourage people to support stoner movies. I mean, it was called, it did about $10 million at the box office last week, and it was considered a flop because they spent $50 million to make it. So movies like that, stoner movies tend to make their money back on demand, DVD, when people could sit home and smoke and enjoy, mm-hmm. and that's where they'll make their money back. But I encourage people to go to the theaters. It's a big movie, and it's really, the cinematography and the CGI is really great, because again, they're trying to sort of like, you know, be a little bit like Lord of the Rings, so you have some nice overhead landscape views and stuff. It's a fun movie.
And then Square Grouper, we've heard, of course, we know of Bobby Platshorn and his part in this, but apparently the movie is more than just the story of Bobby Tuna's gang. Tell us about that one.
Well, it's directed by Billy Corbin, and Billy Corbin is a Miami-based director who did Cocaine Cowboys 1 and 2. He also has a movie coming up after Square Grouper called Limelight that's about Pierre Gation and the sort of club years in New York when Giuliani, our mayor, came in and kind of you start pushing the clubs around and arresting a lot of the people because there was open sales of drugs, especially ecstasy and the Limelight. So anyway, you know, Corbin's sort of like he's created his own little zone for doing drug-related documentaries, and so he decided to focus on marijuana smuggling and Square Grouper. It's called Square Grouper, the Godfathers of Ganja. And I interviewed Bobby and Corbin this week, and I got a little more insight as to, you know, why he's sort of been focusing on these types of subjects. And basically, while they were researching Cocaine Cowboys, you know, down in Florida where they're based in Miami, they just kept on hearing stories, you know, so they sort of were focusing on the cocaine smuggling history of that, you know, coming out of Florida and going, you know, down to Colombia and back and forth. But, you know, they kept on hearing all these, you know, wild stories about marijuana smuggling. So I think they kind of stored it away. It's okay, next movie. One of the stories that they came upon while they were researching Cocaine Cowboys was the story about the Everglades City, which is a city in the Everglades that was known in the, it was the late 70s or the early 80s, was known for marijuana smuggling. What happened, and the story is told very well in the documentary, is that commercial fishing was being kind of phased out because it was in a national park, and so a lot of the people there who made their living on fishing didn't have anything else to do, so they kind of moved over into smuggling. What's fascinating about what happened there is that, you know, the authorities, you know, caught on to it sooner or later, and then they did a mass bust, and they arrested 80% of the people in the town. there's 500 people or something living there, and they just, it's kind of like Puglia, Texas, a few years ago when they arrested half the town on cocaine charges and heroin charges, and that was considered racist. But this was just, maybe it wasn't, it was kind of a white rednecky area down in Florida. So that's one of the stories. The movie opens with the story of the Ethiopian Coptic Zion Church, which is really fascinating. If anybody knows anything about them, they're sort of like, elder hippies from, now, but back then they were, hardcore, a kind of a white Rasta sect that had started in South Florida. It was led by a lot of people calling brother this, brother that. Very conservative, very fundamentalist beliefs, but they loved their ganja. They went and set up a whole base of operations in Jamaica and started smuggling back and forth between Florida and Jamaica. They set up, they bought like property on Star Island in the middle of Miami, which is like, high-end luxury area. They started driving everybody crazy because they were running around smoking nonstop, and ultimately, Brother Love and a bunch of them got busted and did time. And then the middle story is the Black Tuna Gang story, which is about Bobby Platshorn, and he's known as Bobby Tuna, and that story is a little bit more personalized because you really get to know Bob in the story, whereas the other ones are more with like footage from back then and interviews from back then and some interviews now with some of the guys who went to jail and came back. Bob's like right there front and center, and he's really the focus of that section, even though he and his friend Robert Meinster also was arrested similarly. But what we learn, and I guess you have to probably read the book, and you'd know this if you didn't read Bob's book, the Black Tuna Diaries. Bob got out of jail in 2009, and obviously he's been touring around. Everybody in our community has gotten to meet him and know him and love him over the last couple of years. He spent almost 30 years in jail. They really threw the book at him. All the other people who got arrested in the story of Square Grouper, they did 3 to 5 years. Bob does 29.
Yeah.
Why? And, well, what we learn in the documentary is that there were these allegations that Bob and, his partner and maybe others connected to him were threatening to kill the judge while they were in the trial. And then there was allegations that they were trying to, muscle the jurors. All of this stuff was false, but they used it against them and really threw the book at Bob and his partner, and that's why they got all this time. And Bob said he should have been in a camp and not like a supermax type prison, which he was in. It took him, he said, 22 years to get moved from the supermax to a camp. It's amazing what the guy went through, and he's the sweetest, nicest guy. You'd think he would be bitter, and I asked him, are you bitter? And he said, no, I don't look backwards, I look forwards. And the positivity you get from a guy like Bob, who spent so much time in jail, is really it makes you realize that obviously a lot of stuff that all of us go through is pretty minimal compared to what he did. Okay. And so he's just he's an inspiration. He really is. And obviously he's now taking the lead to do things in Florida to help the medical marijuana cause there. And he's got a seniors tour that he's doing, and he's doing great things. He's catching up for lost time, to say the least. And so it's a very captivating story. It's very well done. They took three things. I asked Corbin, one thing, it's a little bit of a bummer because all of them go to jail. Were there any stories of guys who didn't go to jail and kind of beat the system? And he said, yeah, there are. And Bob said there were. And he said all the people that he dealt with, none of them went to jail because he never rolled over. That, I guess, is not as compelling to tell the story of, I fought the law and I won. All these people fought the law and they kind of lost. Mm-hmm. Bob's maybe getting the last laugh now, though, as he tours around the country and hopefully, helping to legalize marijuana. So it took him all these years. It's just amazing. It's just amazing when you think, that smile, that cherubic face, that guy, that he went through so much, and he's not beaten down by it all. You would think he'd be really bitter and, he's angry that he spent so much time, not so much in jail, but in the wrong jail. why did they put him in this, maximum prison, when he really had no record of violence, he had no track record of arrests, and yet they threw the book at him, full time. And, fascinating stories. He spent a lot of time in Colombia. And he kind of tells a lot of that. I mean, it's a really good movie. And unfortunately, it's not going to get a wide release. So what people should do is look for the DVD, which is going to come out on Tuesday, and go to On Demand, which I think is going to be available sometime next week. So it's like a very minimal theatrical rollout, and then going so everybody can see it. So that's what happens with like small you know, indie documentaries. Even though Magnolia Pictures is putting it out, and they're a nice mid-sized, you know, independent film company, they just don't, you know, documentaries are kind of really hard to roll out in a big way. So you're going to have to go find it, you know?
Yeah, we will.
Bobby told me last week it'll be available on video on demand on Netflix Instant Watch and probably on Hulu by Tuesday or Wednesday.
I think it is. I mean, I think the date is the 19th is the release for the DVD, and I think the 22nd is the on-demand. So it'll, you know, it'll start popping around next week. And, you know, those of us in New York, where I live, you know, and it's opening at a theater here, have the opportunity to see it in a theater, which is always nice. And there's going to be some other theatrical, you know, openings around the country, but it's going to be kind of minimal. I think it's basically they're using New York as their place to open, get some publicity, and then, you know, hit the home market.
Right on. And that's Square Grouper for everyone that's interested. Check that out. Just put it into Google, Square Grouper. And, of course, that's the name of a marijuana bale that washes up onto a beach is a Square
Everybody
Grouper.
Everybody tells their stories. I watched the movie with a friend of mine who grew up in Miami, and he just said everybody had stories of you know, being on the shore, and the one time or other, you know, this bale would pop up, and they'd go, oh, my God. There's stories about people swimming out and grabbing and things like that. You know, those are the days. They don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, as we know, most of the marijuana is, you know, is domestically cultivated in America these days, and if it's coming smuggling up, it's kind of coming from Mexico or Canada.
Yeah.
Bob said there's no more marijuana grown in Colombia. I don't know if that's 100% true, but he says it's basically over.
Wow. Well, we got to let you go, Steve, but before we do, I had to give you this little bit of trivia I discovered last night. I'm in this documentary that's coming out, A Normal Life. It was directed by Rod Pittman, which means I now have a Kevin Bacon number of 3.
How so?
It goes from me to Rod Pittman through Normal Life. Rod Pittman was in The Temp with Oliver Platt. Oliver Platt was in Flatliners with Kevin Bacon.
I love it. I'm looking forward to seeing it at the Normal Conference. I believe it's showing on 420.
Yeah, we're doing that tonight, Wednesday night. That's right. A Normal Life documentary will be debuting. And Steve Bloom runs CelebStoner.com. Please check it out. Make sure you get that. And the Reefer Movie Madness, the ultimate guide to stoner films. And pot culture, A to Z.
See all my normal friends next week in Denver. Very excited, looking forward to it. It's going to be a great time.
All right, we'll see you.
And congratulations on show 700, Russ.
Thank you so much, Steve. We'll talk to you again sometime.
See you soon.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for making pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place. Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook wove all of this collective wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
High as a kite, everybody!
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live. I'm going to light.
In the marijuana law reform movement, the cannabis community is represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the consumers who use and cultivate cannabis and the defense attorneys who represent these consumers. These are their stories. It's time for reforming marijuana laws with the Normal Legal Committee.
All right, welcome back, everyone, and we're joined by telephone from Virginia with Keith Stropp, the founder of Normal. Keith, are you on the line?
I am indeed. Russ, nice to be with you.
Oh, we didn't have Carrie here today to do the call screening, so I wanted to make sure then you heard those commercials, you'd know it was us.
They sounded somewhat unique.
Well, thank you. Do you think that's true, though, that if we had a dime for every dime bag sold in America, marijuana would be legal by now?
Oh, without question, by the way, without question. What's holding us back, I think, are two things. One is lack of adequate funding, especially on the consumer side. You get a lot of money coming in now on the gold rush for the industry, but the consumers still are shortchanged in the deal. And I still think we have timid politicians, and one of the ways you get over timid elected officials is you make PAC contributions to their reelection campaign. Oftentimes, that helps them come around on an issue like ours.
Yes, I hope so. And of course, we're speaking to you today. This is our last show before we head off to Denver for the national conference. And you're giving a talk there that kind of illustrates that point about the need now for a demarcation between who's representing consumers and who's representing industry, and how that differs from the early days when everybody was just, hey, let's not get arrested. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was simple in the early days because you were either in favor of marijuana prohibition or you were opposed to it. And those of us who thought you shouldn't be arresting smokers, we were all on the same side. But we knew, or at least many of us knew even back then, that as we got closer to our eventual political goal, which is the legalization of marijuana, period, regardless of why you use it, it's none of the government's business whether we smoke or why we smoke. But we knew as we got closer to our goal, you would begin to have people speaking for the industry and people speaking for the consumers, in this case, the smokers and the patients. And that is, in fact, what is happening. And frankly, I think it's even more important than ever that consumers have a strong voice at this time, and that those who speak for the industry, there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I mean, if there weren't people out there growing and selling marijuana, I wouldn't have had anything to smoke for the last 46 years. So those are friends and allies, and we got to keep that in mind. However, like in most other industries, people who are growing and selling marijuana are largely interested in making a profit, and especially dispensaries are interested in making money, and they're making it from the consumers. And right now, they're overcharging consumers. So, yes, I think over the next 3, 4, 5 years, there are going to be some interesting adjustments to be made to the issue, and I think it's terribly important that everyone who speaks as an advocate on legalizing marijuana be transparent. Who do you represent? Where do you get your funding, and do you speak for the industry or for the consumers?
Mm, yeah, excellent. I also wanted to make sure that folks knew what was happening up at the top with Normal and federal efforts. I mean, we've been reporting on the Washington bill, the Vermont bill today for dispensaries. We report on a lot of states, but you're right there in Washington, D.C., and you're working with, you know, these federal representatives. And this year, I mean, we've got Jared Polis coming to the Normal conference, this new representative from Colorado. So tell us about what's happening at the federal level and the prospects.
Well, in fact, we had hoped that we might have this new federal bill introduced by now. Because of the challenge of drafting the bill, it's taken longer to get it drafted than we anticipated by the Legislative Council's Office of Congress. But Barney Frank, once again, has agreed to push the envelope on this issue, and we approached him several months ago and proposed that it's time now to stop pussyfooting around on this issue. It is time for us to have a federal proposal that would do what Congress did at the end of alcohol prohibition, and that is to back the federal government out of the picture altogether and allow the states to do what they want. Those states who want to maintain criminal penalties, as foolish as that may be, that's their right, and they get to do it, just as there are some states that still have dry counties for alcohol in this country. But most importantly, it would say that for any state that wants to begin to experiment with various forms of legalization, the federal government will be out of the way and you are free to do it. It's a terribly important step. It's the first time in 75 years that you would have had a proposal like that in the Congress. And you're absolutely right. While Barney Frank is our primary sponsor, Jared Polis, a second-term congressman from Boulder, who is our keynote speaker at the conference next week, he also is very committed to this proposal and is going to be one of the co-sponsors.
Yeah, it's excellent. And, of course, the conference is next week, Thursday through Saturday, and we're streaming it live here on Normal Show Live, absolutely free, so make sure you're tuning in. Those are it'll be Mountain Time when you check out our conference agenda at normal.org/conference. All those are Mountain Time. And we're speaking with Keith Stopp, the founder of Normal, you know, 40 years ago, in the 70s is what I was trying to say, founder of Normal 40 years ago. And we've been having these conferences now, you know, 40 years in a row. This year's conference features a Denver mayor. mayoral debate hosted by Montel Williams. Are there any memories or examples back from previous conferences where you had something of that stature at a normal conference?
We've never had local officials like that. We've had members of Congress before. For example, 5 or 6 years ago, the last time we held a conference in Washington, D.C., Barney Frank was our featured speaker. So we have occasionally had members of Congress, although only rarely, because most of them, frankly, wouldn't be caught dead at a normal conference. They think it would be far too radical for the folks back home. But it's particularly interesting to see the municipal support on this one. The fact that the majority of candidates for mayor in Denver, and I think there are 6 or 7 candidates running right now, at least 4 or 5 of whom, by the way, support legalizing marijuana, but they're going to have a candidates debate hosted by Montel Williams at the normal conference. I think that's an incredible show of how far the issue has come, that they feel comfortable doing that. There was a time several years ago when the former mayor of Baltimore spoke, I believe, at a normal conference, and I know at a DPA conference, but never did we have a collection of mayoral candidates. People, you know, once you get elected, you're in a safe zone for a couple of years, so you can go do these kinds of things. But this time, you've got people who are going to be facing election within 30 days, and they are going to a normal conference to debate drug policy. So, yes, I think it is an enormous step forward for Colorado and for normal and for the whole legalization movement.
Yeah, and we've got such great guests, among them Congressman Polis and the Denver mayoral candidates, Montel Williams. We've also got Dr. Lester Grinspoon, who will be there Saturday for a final Q&A session in person. You know, we did Skype a couple years ago, but in person this time. And in preparing your remarks for the Normal Conference and going through the 40 years of history with Normal, you point out Dr. Grinspoon among a few people, Dr. Whipple and Dr. Zinberg, as people who are early supporters of Normal and very important to the cause. People know who Dr. Grinspoon is. Tell a little bit about Dr. Whipple and Dr. Zinberg.
Well, Dr. Zinberg, Norman Zinberg, was another Harvard medical professor, as Lester Grinspoon. Dr. Grinspoon is a retired Harvard Medical School professor. And I met them about the same time. Norman Zinberg had written a book called Drug Set and Setting that was terribly important in challenging the idea that any drug use is abuse. He posed the theory that just like alcohol, there's a difference between use and abuse, and we should reflect that in our laws. That sounds pretty moderate today, but it was pretty radical back when he did it in probably mid-70s or something when that book came out. Dorothy Whipple was a fascinating pediatrician who's was based in Washington, D.C. She's no longer with us. But when I met her, she was in her mid-70s. I was so impressed with her. She had written a book called Is the Grass Greener? Now, again, this is a loving grandmother pediatrician who wrote a book saying, I care, everything I do in my life is about taking care of children. I care very much about them, and I think we need to legalize marijuana. It would be better for children. Well, my goodness, you can imagine there, no pediatrician in America had the courage to stand up and say that. And she was this beautiful 76-year-old gray-haired grandmother. So she traveled all over the country with us to testify at state legislatures, and she was incredibly effective. I might quickly add another person like that was John Finlater. John was the deputy director of the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, and or back then it was called the BNDD, but the same agency, the Federal Drug Police. And shortly after he retired, and he was number two man at the agency, he joined the Normal Advisory Board, and he traveled around the country with us to help convince state legislators who might be feeling a little shaky about our decriminalization proposals that, no, as a tough federal cop, a drug cop, he thought it was time to decriminalize marijuana. These people played an enormous role, but let me quickly add this. No one has been as important over these last 40 years as Dr. Lester Grinspoon. He is, in my mind, the intellectual godfather of this movement, and he still is today. He's the brightest person I think I've ever met in my life. His book, Marijuana Reconsidered, still is, I think, the best book ever written on this subject, and I can't imagine that we would have made the progress we've made in the last 40 years, but for Lester Grinspoon's leadership.
Yeah, we are so lucky to have him at the conference. It'll be great to get the live question and answer. And again, it'll be right here on Normal Show Live. You can watch it on the stream. Keith Strop is the founder of Normal in Washington, D.C., doing the good work for 40 years now, going on the 41st year. And the last question, someone in the chat room wanted to know, Keith, when's it going to be legal?
Well, if they're serious, my serious answer is that I think in 2012 we will have at least one, perhaps two states that will actually legalize marijuana. By that I mean regulate it, tax it, and for all responsible use, not just medical use. Probably Colorado and likely California, but there are even a couple of other states that are in that mix as well. So I think we will have the first few states legalizing marijuana by 2012. Now, remember, I'm the one who projected we'd have marijuana legalized by 1978, so don't bet everything on it.
Well, thank you, Keith, for your words of wisdom, and we will see you next week in Denver, Colorado for the Normal National Conference.
Look forward to it, Russ.
All right, and thanks for founding the organization that gave me a job. This is wonderful. For everyone here at...
gave me something to do for the last several decades, too.
Thank you so much. For everyone here at Normal and the Normal Foundation, for Ganja John, Cannabis Carrie, Calico the intern, I'm Radical Russ. We will talk to you next week live on Wednesday or Thursday. Probably definitely Thursday. We'll see what we can get you for Wednesday. Until then, you'll be listening to Normal Network replays and some of our replays from this week, Monday and Tuesday replays. And we'll have a lot of fun. We'll see you on the live streams. Thanks for everything. Thank you for 700 shows. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.